Hey gang, Bob Main here with another episode of your weekly Handgun World podcast. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. Well, this episode is about small guns. I'm going to talk about small guns, some pocket guns, and also some small guns that people like to carry on their belt and so forth. You know, they're so popular these days. Everybody's going for the small guns. They're all going for the single-stack 9mm or the single-stack 45s. And there's so many manufacturers that are making small guns. And I just recently got a new small gun that I'm going to talk a little bit about. So I've done this before, but I want to do it again. I want to talk about a couple things regarding these little tiny guns. I want to talk about their viability, some of the concerns I have about them, some of the positives that I like about them, and then let you kind of make the decision as to whether small guns are something for you. Before the main topic, I have some voicemails. Some listeners have called in a couple of really good voicemails lately, so I want you to hear them. By the way, if you want to call in a voicemail, I love it. I get a lot of them. 210-646-1727 is the phone number. That's 210-646-1727. If you're not in a position to remember that phone number or write it down, just go to handgunworld.com. And on the right-hand margin of the page, about halfway down, you'll see a Call Me button. All you got to do is click that Call Me button. It'll ask you to put in your phone number, and it'll hook you up with my Google voicemail account, and you can leave me a voicemail message. A lot of you have been calling in great voicemails and encouraging me through my cancer treatments and things like that. Thank you. Every one of those that comes in, folks, you don't know how much that means to me. You know, folks, you don't know how much that means to me. Thank you so much. All that encouragement. Hey, I'm a fighter. I have a warrior mindset. I'm feeling pretty good, folks. I'm feeling pretty good. You know, I've been through 3 chemotherapy treatments so far. Four. I've been through 4 of them so far. And I even went to MD Anderson and got a second opinion. And they're tweaking my treatment just a little bit. And it must be working. I'm starting to feel a lot better than I did a couple of months ago when I got diagnosed. So praise God for that. God's looking out for me. He is the great healer. And I know that He is going to put the doctors in my life and the people in my life and the treatments in my life that are going to encourage me and that are going to heal me. And by all of you calling in voicemails to encourage me, I really appreciate that. I'm going to beat this cancer once and for all. So here is the first voicemail.
Hey, Bob. My name's Jay. I'm from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. First, I wanted to just say thanks for all you do. I love your podcast, and I really appreciate it. Also, I want to thank Gary and Steve for last week's show. I learned a lot from that podcast. My question is kind of a story. A few weeks ago, I was driving to Cabela's, and I accidentally got off at the wrong exit, and I ended up in New Jersey, the worst state to end up in. So what I did was I pulled over, and I put my car CW9 in the safe and the magazines I locked in the glove compartment. And really my question is just, has this ever happened to you? I know you can carry in, you know, 42 states and I don't know, but I'm surrounded by states that, you know, New York, New Jersey, that don't honor any reciprocity. So, you know, I'm kind of stuck in Pennsylvania. But is there anything I should have done that I didn't do? You know, I just locked them up and turned around and went to the toll booth and tried to get back to Pennsylvania as fast as possible. So I just wanted to ask and, you know, see what your opinion was. But, you know, thanks for all you do. And I just wanted to let you know I pray for you and your wife every night. And just keep up the good work. I appreciate it. Thank you. Bye.
Well, thank you, Jay. By the way, let me compliment you on a nice choice of pistol there, the Carr CW9. Most of you know I'm a big fan of Carr pistols. As a matter of fact, that's one thing that I'm going to talk about when I talk about small guns. That's just one of them I'm going to talk about. There's several others. To answer your question, Jay, hey, by the way, folks, I'm doing this while I'm driving, so trying to keep the background noise out as best as I can, and I've memorized all these the topics on these voicemails that have been called in. There's only 2 of them, so that was actually pretty easy. Jay, I can't think of anything else that I would have done. I mean, you took a wrong turn. And I've taken wrong turns before. The cool thing about when I take a wrong turn when I'm driving through Texas is that I'm still in Texas. Matter of fact, when I take a wrong turn in Texas, I could still probably drive another 8 hours and still be in Texas. So I don't have to worry too much about the gun laws, but you took a wrong turn and ended up in New Jersey. Wow! Man, no offense to my New Jersey listeners, because I've actually received some emails and some voicemails from New Jersey listeners. I really feel sorry for those of you in New Jersey. I feel sorry for you with regards to gun laws. I have some relatives in New Jersey, by the way, and they tell me about their ridiculous gun laws, the, you know, draconian gun laws that they have there. So what would you have done differently, Jay? No, that's, you know, you corrected the situation and you got out of there as soon as possible. That's the key, is just if you take a wrong turn and you end up with a gun in a prohibited area, just get out of the area as soon as possible. That's all I can say. That's pretty much about my advice to you, is that you did the right thing. You know, the fact that you locked them up and everything, I think, was also another good move. And like I said, you turn around and you got out of there as soon as possible. So thanks for calling that in, Jay. And by the way, last week's podcast, thanks for commenting on that. I've received a lot of emails on last week's interview with Gary Slider from handgunlaw.us. Please make sure that you go to his website as a good resource, if you're not already, for concealed carry laws and reciprocity agreements and things like that. You know, traveling around with firearms, it's not, I mean, it's easy, but you've got to pay attention to what you're doing, especially if you live in the part of the United States where you might go through several states on one drive. Again, I don't have much of that problem because I stay in one state when I'm driving 95% of the time. And if I go to Louisiana, I'm normally flying and staying in Louisiana for a while. So I don't have much of the problem with that. But a lot of you that live up in the Northeast, when there's a lot of different states that you're crossing, you got to know those laws. So thanks for calling in, Jay. I appreciate that. Let's take the next voicemail.
Hey, Bob. Continue to hope you're doing well and praying for you and your family. I had a quick question for you. Really enjoying the kind of evaluation you're doing with the 1911s. And was wondering if you could add one thing to your testing, and that is, I know you're friends with Mr. Hottaway. At some point in your testing, I was wondering if you could maybe see about getting your hands on a Nighthawk Custom 1911, just for comparison purposes. I'd kind of like to hear an opinion on what difference there is, how much the difference is. I mean, I know they're fine pistols and a lot better. I'm just kind of curious, once you feel like you're pretty well and used to the two 1911s you've got, to compare them to a high-end 1911, maybe if you could get a chance to get a hold of one, run a couple hundred rounds through it, and just give us an idea on the differences as you see them, what differences they made to, you know, to the shooting of them, and, you know, just how they compared. Anyway, just thought that'd be a really interesting comparison. Thanks again, and appreciate the show and all that you do. Thanks, bye.
Thank you, sir. That is an excellent point. And as a matter of fact, next month, June 7th and 8th, when I'm in Centerton, Arkansas at the Nighthawk Custom Training Academy, teaching Beyond Concealed Carry with my co-instructor, Ben Branham, and also John Hottaway is going to be a co-instructor there. John has promised me that I get to shoot some of his Nighthawk guns, so that will give me a chance to do a comparison. As a matter of fact, I'll try to spend a pretty good deal of time shooting his Nighthawks. Hopefully, I'd like to see if I can get him to give me one in 9mm. Maybe that one that he's been carrying lately, that new one that he mentioned on the show a few weeks ago. And I'd like to shoot one of the 45 versions of it as well. I'll bring both of my 1911s and do a little comparison. So, yeah, thanks for doing that. Hey, and by the way, the 1911 test that I'm doing here, I got to tell you something about my 1911s. If you go to my YouTube channel, I recently uploaded a review on my Magnum Research Desert Eagle commander-sized 1911. So check that out. Go to my YouTube channel, Just search Handgun World on YouTube and you'll find it. It's the most recent video that's been put up there. Let me know what you think. I got to tell you what happened right after that, like within 30 minutes after I got done shooting that video. I had a couple of rounds of 45 ACP left. Well, actually, I had more than that. I thought I had only two rounds left. So I told Ben Branham, I said, hey, I'm going to put these two rounds in my 1911 magazine. I'm going to put it in my Desert Eagle. I'm going to just fire these two rounds. Well, I did that, and the gun went full auto on me. And I didn't, you know, and Ben said to me, he goes, what happened? He goes, was that you or the gun? I said, I think it was the gun. So I searched around in my range bag, found some more ammo, put two more rounds in another magazine to see if it was the magazine. Sure enough, it went full auto again. So then I put like about four rounds in the next magazine. Sure enough, it went full auto. So just to be sure, I handed the pistol to Ben. I said, Ben, you shoot this thing. And he put a few rounds in the magazine, and it went full auto on him. So something happened. Sear broke, reset spring broke, something happened. So it got put into a box on Monday, and it got sent back up to Magnum Research. And to their credit, they sent me a prepaid FedEx shipping label, so it's not costing me a dime. And I'm sure it's not going to cost me a dime to get that gun back from them all fixed up. But things can and do happen. And what a shock that was. I got to tell you, 45 ACP on full auto, you got to really pay attention. You got to hang on to that pistol. It was a lot of fun, too. it was a lot of fun, I have to admit, folks. It was, you know, I kind of wish I would have stayed there and fired a whole bunch more rounds. But anyway, I felt that Magnum Research needed to know about it. I could have given it to a local gunsmith for repair, but hey, it was under warranty, and they needed to know about it, and it's, you know, their job to fix it, so it got sent off. I still love the pistol. The pistol's great, but it went full auto on me, so can't have that. As far as my SIG 1911, the RCS, I left that with a local gunsmith to have the ambi safety put on it. One thing about these 1911s is I just can't seem to keep them out of the gunsmith's hands. I don't know what it is. I've had both of these less than 6 months, and both of them have been to a gunsmith. Now, to be fair, the SIG went to a gunsmith just to have an ambi safety put on it because I didn't want to fiddle with it myself. So nothing wrong with the SIG RCS. It didn't go back to a gunsmith for repair of any kind. Okay, you just heard what happened with my Magnum Research 1911. Yeah, that's going back to a gunsmith. I've never had to send any of my Glocks back to Glock. Okay, I'm just saying that. Now, have they needed repair? Yes, one has needed a repair, but it was a part replacement, and I was able to replace the part myself. So, I gotta say, that's one huge advantage of a pistol like a Glock, is that so easy to just replace the parts myself. And, of course, I know a lot of you are probably saying, well, Bob, you know, I can work on my 1911 myself. And you probably can. If you know how to do that, that's cool. More power to you. I don't know how to work on 1911s. I suppose if I had trained myself and gotten familiar with 1911s as much as I should, then I'd probably be able to work on them. It just seems like they're much more difficult. Obviously not impossible. Easy for some folks. But more difficult to work on and do things yourself than they are with something like a Glock or even an M&P. And after Ben took that M&P Armorer's course and we did that interview, I found out that M&Ps are pretty simple as well. Now, I'll say this. Both of these 1911s that I have are fantastic. They're both highly accurate. And as I've mentioned, the trigger on that Magnum Research, the 1911, I tell you what, it's one of the best out-of-the-box triggers for that price of a gun, for a $700 gun. It's got a trigger like a custom gun. I mean, it really is that good. And then I've given it about a 320-round trigger job so far on the way to 1,000 rounds for both of them, 1,000-round trigger jobs. All my guns get 1,000-round trigger jobs eventually. You know, for about 325 rounds through it, it's feeling pretty nice. It's real good, and I got no complaints about the SIG trigger either. For a carry piece, I like the SIG trigger pretty much just the way it is. Okay, that pretty much takes care of the voicemails, but, sir, I will compare at least a couple of my 1911s, maybe somebody else's, to some of the high-end Nighthawk 1911s that Hottaway has. That's going to be fun. It's just going to be fun shooting those. That's going to be a blast. Looking forward to that. Playtime, playtime. All right, quick break, and then I'll get to the main topic of small guns.
New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg is bloviating about gun shows, blaming these congenial get-togethers as a source of violence in his city. Bloomberg evidently hasn't listened to the Bureau of Justice Statistics, which reports that less than 1% of guns used in crimes were bought at a gun show. Bloomberg might want to listen to the Anti-Gun Center to Prevent Handgun Violence, which surveyed large police departments and learned that less than 5% of cop shops felt that gun shows were a problem. Better yet, Bloomberg should put a chain on his local thugs and leave out-of-state gun shows alone. Arm yourself with facts to strip the gun control industry bare. Visit gunfacts.info and get your free copy of Gun Facts. Called indispensable by Cam Edwards of NRA News, Gun Facts is your rapid reference guide to debunking gun control myths and shaming politicians into obedience. www.gunfacts.info.
All right, main topic, small guns. Well, small guns seem to be the big rave these days. Everybody wants the tiny guns. It seems like manufacturers who make these small guns can't make them fast enough, and dealers can't keep them in stock. Well, here's some of my thoughts on some of the small guns out there, and I'm going to break one of my own rules. I'm going to make some comments on some of them that I haven't had a chance to shoot yet, although I have had a chance to go to a store and play around and dry fire them and things like that. First of all, let's start with the Glock 42. Now, I have some news to share. I now own a Glock 42. Wow, you know, when it first came out, I said, I'm not going to get one of those. I don't see the point. Well, a few things sold me. A few things changed my mind. I was against it. I was against it, but I was in Houston, Texas a few weeks ago, and I stopped by a gun shop that I like to frequent over there, and they had a smoking deal on a Glock 42, And they said it was the last one that they had. I don't know if that's a... Hey, I'm in sales, folks, so I can kind of recognize sales techniques. But actually, this guy didn't... I think he was being serious. He didn't seem like he was pulling a sales technique on me. So I picked it up. Now, why did I get a Glock 42? Well, let me tell you the two things that sold me on it. Number one was John Hadaway, and number two was Hickok 45. Yes, John Hadaway. Believe it or not, John Hadaway, when I did that interview with him recently, and we talked about, we did those reviews on some guns, and he talked about the Glock 42, and it kind of just made sense when he was talking about, you know, if you are a person who's used to the Glock platform, which I am, I'm used to the Glock platform, it just makes sense to pick up a 380, a small, pocket-sized, you know, small 380 in the same platform with the same kind of trigger. And I have to say that the trigger on the Glock 42 is very nice. It's a typical Glock trigger, and if you like Glock triggers, you're going to like the trigger on the Glock 42. Actually, you know what? Glenn Tate also helped sell me on it because he said he got one. So, hey, Glenn, if you're listening, guess what? You also helped cost me some money. The interview that we did a few weeks back, and you said you got a Glock 42, kind of made me a little jealous, so I had to get a Glock 42 also. So I joined the club. Now, a few things I want to say about this gun, because I've been carrying it a lot lately. It's still, I think, too big for a pocket gun. It's pocketable with a good pocket holster. And as a matter of fact, it happened to fit an old Uncle Mike's pocket holster that I had. It happened to fit in there no problem with the trigger guard properly covered like it's supposed to be. I'm going to order probably a DeSantis Superfly. I like those Superflies. I'm going to order that for the Glock 42. There's a couple of others actually that I'm looking at as well, pocket holsters. If I'm wearing cargo shorts or I'm wearing something with real large pockets, fine. But you know what? My Car P380 just totally beats out the Glock 42 as a pocket gun. As a true pocket gun, especially, you know, folks, you know I'm in business. You know I'm in sales. And sometimes I'm going into a fancy hotel and I'm selling my stuff that I sell. And the GMs and all the engineering directors, they're all in suits, and I'm going in there with a sport coat on and things like that. And or actually, sometimes I don't have a sport coat. Sometimes I have a shirt and tie because I want to try to fit in with what they're wearing a little bit. I don't like to wear suits, but sometimes I'll wear a coat and tie to try to fit in, or a shirt and a tie to fit in. And so I have to tuck my shirt in. And I don't like using tuckable holsters, so what do? I slide that Car P380 in my pocket. Sometimes the back pocket, sometimes my front hip pocket on the right side. And nobody ever knows that I'm carrying. This looks like a call I have to get, so I'm going to put you on pause and grab this. Okay, so people don't really know I'm carrying when I've got that little P380. As a pocket gun, it beats out the Glock hands down. But what I really like about the Glock 42 is kind of a stow and go kind of gun. In other words, if I'm going to make one of those real quick, I'm not going to be gone more than 10 minutes from the house, but I want to make sure I'm armed, and let me just grab a gun that I'm not going to have to do much to just throw that on my belt or inside my waistband and run to the convenience store real quick and come back. I'm normally not in that much of a hurry. But it makes a great stow-and-go gun for doing that. Because I keep my Glock 42. I have a nice inside the waistband. I bought a High Noon Mr. Softy for it. I'm gonna get a Dale Fricke Archangel for it pretty soon. But what I like about the clip holsters by High Noon is I just keep it in there. And if I just got to run real quick, I just clip that onto my belt, throw the extra magazine in the DeSantis Mag Packer inside my pocket, and go to where I have to go and come back. Now, is it a primary carry gun? Absolutely not. It's absolutely not a primary carry gun because, like all small guns, it's low in capacity. And I've done way too much research and just feel so much more comfortable having plenty of ammunition on me. And I just like it that way. I can conceal a Glock 26, which is also a small gun. I can conceal a Glock 26 pretty much as easily as I can conceal a CAR PM9 or my Shield 9mm. So these little single stack 9s, while they're nice and thin, maybe it's just my build and the way I dress. It's probably what it is. It's the type of untucked shirts that I use, but I don't have much of a problem concealing a Glock 26, especially in the appendix carry position. But the Glock 42, a good stow and go, and, you know, if you can afford the ammo, it is good to get new people shooting it. I think the recoil is fine. It doesn't bother me much at all. My CAR P380 recoils a lot more than the Glock 42. I really like the usable sights. You know, it's got your typical Glock sights, which I'm going to change out. And by the way, all the great sight makers are now coming out pretty quickly with sights for the Glock 42. I'm really taking a liking to either the Trijicon HDs in terms of sights or the Ameriglow with the orange front dots. So I'm probably going to pick up a set of Trijicon HDs and put those on this Glock 42 pretty quickly. And I bought some Pierce grip extensions. Since it's primarily not going to be a pocket gun, I don't mind putting the magazine extensions on there, which gives my pinky a place to rest. Although, I carry my Glock 26 pretty much without the magazine extensions because I don't see the point. If I'm going to put those magazine extensions on there, it's getting close to being the size of my Glock 19. Yeah, it's still got more of a rounded grip than my Glock 19, but it's close enough in size I might as well just pack the Glock 19. So I'm used to shooting a pistol without my pinky having a place to rest. So that's what I'll say about the Glock 42. Real simple gun because it is a Glock. And, of course, when I field stripped it and cleaned it, I knew exactly what I was doing right away because I've done it hundreds of times with all my Glocks. So, there is a benefit in sticking with the same platform. I can see why the M&P shooters really took a liking to the M&P Shield. I can see why the XD shooters have taken a liking to the XDS. So, staying with the same platform, there's definitely something to be said with that. Now, the car guns. You guys have heard me talk about the car pistols quite a bit. You know, I can't say enough good things about those. Yeah, they've had their issues. You know, years ago they had their issues with magazines and, you know, some feeding problems and things like that. Seems like pretty much car has those worked out. Pick one, anyone, any of those car pistols for concealed carry for a small gun. I highly recommend them. I'm a big fan of them. They have very smooth double action triggers. Now, I don't like to keep guns that I don't shoot much. And to make room for the Glock 42, I got rid of my Smith & Wesson Bodyguard. I had the Bodyguard 380. I got rid of that because, well, first of all, I just wasn't shooting it. And again, I don't like to keep guns that I don't shoot on a regular basis. The Bodyguard, the trigger was just way too horrible on it, and I thought that the laser was pointless. The laser on that gun is kind of pointless. It's not very intuitive. I think you need to have a more intuitive laser if you're going to use a laser. I think using my index finger or a thumb or whatever to push that button near the front of the gun to turn the laser on, I just don't see myself in a defensive situation, right? When the stink hits the fan and I'm in fear for my life and I need a gun right now and split seconds count, I don't see that laser benefiting much. As a matter of fact, I think it's going to slow me down way too much. So I found a new home for the Bodyguard 380. I would recommend, if you own a Smith & Wesson Bodyguard 380, just plan on using it without the laser. Just don't even plan on using the laser at all. Just use it as a nice little 380 pocket gun. That has good sights on it, too. The Smith & Wesson Bodyguard is a very well-built gun. I was very impressed with how well-built it is. However, comparing it to the Glock 42, the Glock 42 is just as well-built. Same caliber, same everything. So, these small guns, let me tell you what, these small guns are a million times better than having no gun. I can tell you that. And let's not forget, folks, I've said this many times, do the research, prove me wrong if you want, but I'm right about this. Basically, the 380 caliber, that bullet is 9 millimeters in diameter. So it's a 9 millimeter bullet, it's just a little bit underpowered compared to a 9 millimeter. Now, there's some pretty good 380 ammo out there. Check out the stuff by Double Tap Ammo and Underwood Ammo and Buffalo Boar and Corbon. Even some of the new Speer Gold Dot 380, some of the new Federal ammo that's out there. There's some real good 380 ammo. And, you know, these little 380s, if you can shoot them quickly and shoot them accurately, well, what's wrong with producing a gun where you can pump six rounds accurately into somebody who wants to kill you and save your life with these little guns? So, small guns have their place, and they're better than no gun at all. And if you're in an NPE, if you're in a non-permissible environment where you just simply can't get away with the bigger gun, I don't recommend any of them that I'm talking about on this podcast. I don't recommend any of them as a primary carry weapon. Because as a primary carry weapon, I just think you need to have as much capacity as you can have on board. All right, so anyway, I talked about the Smith & Wesson Bodyguard 380. The Beretta Nano. Now, the Beretta Nano, I've heard some good things about it. This is one I haven't fired yet. But I did get a chance to spend an extensive amount of time doing some dry fire. I like the trigger on it, actually. I thought the trigger was actually pretty good. It sits a little high in my hand, has a little bit higher of a bore axis than I really care for, but I like the feel of it, especially with the extended magazine. I like the feel of it. You know, if you like Berettas, the only thing I don't like about the Beretta Nano is the slide is not going to lock back after the final round is fired, so you're not going to have a slide lock indicator that basically tells you that you're out of ammo. Now, you know what? For the purpose of these guns, I don't know. I'm not going to call these little small guns belly guns, by the way. I hate it when people say that. I hate it when people say, well, these guns are for belly-to-belly distance, and they're not much good for anything beyond that. Well, I don't agree. If you can't shoot these little guns beyond belly-to-belly distance, then your shooting sucks. You need to improve it. Because these little guns can be very, very accurate. You can be accurate with these guns out to 15 or 20 yards if you practice, and you should be practicing with these little guns. So I don't like to call them bad breath distance guns anymore. I don't like to call them belly guns or anything like that anymore. Because I think you're selling yourself short. Your shooting skills need to be improved if you can't be accurate more than 2 or 3 yards with these little tiny guns, okay? I mean, I hope you agree with me on that. Some of you might not, but if you're going to use these things to defend your life, well, what happens if the bad guy's 10 yards away and you haven't practiced with these small guns past 10 yards? You better get out and do that. And you better be able to at least make good quality hits. So, I like it. You know, in the past, some of the training classes that I've put on, people have brought their Smith & Wesson Shields or their XDSs and they've trained with those guns. That's good. You need to be doing that. So I like the Beretta Nano. The Beretta Nano seems to be a good, slim 9mm that's well built. And I would recommend that you take a good look at that. I like the price point. You know, Beretta keeps the price pretty affordable on that little Nano. And that's good. Now, I want to talk about next the Kimber Solo. A long time ago, I had a chance to shoot a Kimber Solo when it first came out. I think they'd only been shipping them like a month. And I found a dealer, this is back when I was living up in Dallas-Fort Worth, and I found a dealer that had one on their rental counter, actually. And I hated the thing. It was a Jam-O-Matic. It was a Jam-O-Matic. It's a great concept, especially if you like 1911s and you want something that, well, of course, it's not a 1911 though. But if you're a Kimber fanatic and you just got to have a Kimber, it's your money. But the Kimber Solo is probably one that I would not recommend. You heard John Hadaway a few weeks back talk about the Walther CCP, so I'm kind of thinking about, wow, do I need to add a Walther CCP? Of course, I got so many small guns. Why, you know, this is not about need, is it? But the Walther CCP has been getting great reviews. John Hadaway is real high on them. I'm going to shoot that in June also. So be listening for a podcast interview. Not an interview. Well, maybe it might be an interview. Who knows? Be listening for a podcast review on the Walther CCP after I get a chance to shoot it. Okay. The next little small gun. I want to talk about the Ruger LCP. There's so many people out there that own the Ruger LCPs. And they also have the Kel-Tec P3AT, which... that was pretty much the predecessor. If you hold a Ruger LCP next to a Kel-Tec P3AT, there's not a lot of difference between those guns. Go figure. Great guns. They're great guns. You know, for the price point. Are they a bad gun? No. Are there better out there? Yeah. I think there are better buys, and here's why. For example, Car Arms is making their C-Series in a 380. I think it's called the C380 or the CP380. I think it's just a little bit better quality gun with better sights and a much better trigger than the Ruger LCP or the Kel-Tec P380. So look for guns like that that are still affordable. I mean, that little Car 380, you know, the P380 is kind of expensive. I get that. And some people say, Bob, I just, you know, that's not in my budget. Well, their C-Series of guns are a good one to look at. The CM9, the C380 model, the CW9, if you like the 45s. They have a CW45. Those are great values. And, you know, they're kind of, they don't get a lot of mention. So that's why I'm mentioning them. Their C-Series lines of pistols are excellent buys, and they have real good triggers on them, and they're good high quality guns, and you're basically getting everything you get in the P series, just not the upgraded barrel and some of the other fancy aesthetics, which, you know, don't matter a whole lot. So check that out. But I think, and I know I'm probably going to upset some Ruger LCP owners. In fact, I'm probably going to upset some Ruger fans. It's not that I don't like Ruger guns. I like Ruger guns. The LC9, I think, would be a much better choice than buying an LCP because I think there's better pocket 380s. That's all I'm saying. So if you want to get a small Ruger gun, check out the LC9. I like the LC9, and it seems like it's got better sights than an LCP. That's kind of my thoughts on that. Now, Ben Branham, about a month ago, let me shoot his little Kel-Tec 32. I'd never shot a Kel-Tec 32. And I think it's the model P32. Don't hold me to that. And I'm driving, so I'm not about to get on the internet while I'm driving and try to look some of this stuff up. You can look it up. But I am really impressed with that little Kel-Tec P32. I think Ben said his is a first generation. There's a first and second generation, but I was impressed. I was really impressed. Number one, I really like the soft recoil of the 32 ACP. Now, Is that underpowered? You're probably going to say, boy, that's really underpowered, Bob. Yeah. Yeah, it is. But again, pick good ammo. Make your shots count. Use it as a backup gun only. And I think you're going to be in pretty good shape. I was impressed with the Kel-Tec P32. It was reliable. And ammo's not cheap, though. That's kind of a criticism I have. Shopping around, I guess. But that's something that, you know, that's kind of like forgotten about, because all the small guns are now either 380 and 9mm. And really, if you can handle these small guns in 9mm, that's the way to go. Let me say that again. If you can handle these guns in 9mm, that's the way to go. I absolutely love my Car PM9. My Car PM9 is my second favorite gun that I own. And I just can't say enough good things about it. The way it shoots, the accuracy, the trigger, the way it handles, the recoil is not bad, it's durable, I got plenty of magazines, there's never a time that I can't conceal it. It's just the capacity on it is the only thing that leaves a little bit to be desired. But still, it's an 8-round gun. I mean, that's pretty good. I'll take 8 rounds. With the extended magazine, it's an 8-round gun. 7 in the magazine, 1 in the chamber. Now, another small gun I want to talk about, excuse me, is the Ruger LCR revolver. I shot Ben Branham's LCR. That was a while back. That was several months ago, right after we finished up teaching a class. I thought it was okay. I know Ben loves it. I just thought it was okay. You know, when you start getting real lightweight in those revolvers, and that Ruger LCR is a lightweight revolver, they're just not much fun to shoot. It is an accurate little thing. It's only 5 rounds. Now, I want to ask you a question as you're listening to this. What would you rather have? Would you rather have 5 rounds of 38 Special or 7 rounds in a 380 with good ammo? Well, some people might think that's kind of a toss-up. Or, I tell you what, let's compare a Ruger LCR revolver or any of the small revolvers, little J-frame revolvers. Let's compare those to, like, for example, my Car PM9. My Car Arms PM9 with the extended magazine is an 8-round 9mm gun. Okay, I can pocket that thing in my cargo shorts if I need to. If I'm carrying it inside the waistband, it completely disappears. And I have 8 rounds of 9mm. Would I rather have that or 5 rounds of 38 Special? And by the way, my Car PM9's got better sights than most of the small revolvers. Got a better trigger, I think, than most of the small revolvers. So, well, I've made my choice, and you know what it is. Am I saying that a small revolver is a bad gun to have? No, that's not what I'm saying. If you have a small revolver, if you have a little J-frame, 5-shot revolver, 38 Special, and you got some good plus P ammo in there, and you can make good quality hits with that, and you've trained with it, then terrific. But now, and folks, I look at this from a civilian standpoint. See what I mean? I mean, I look at this from just an everyday guy. That's what I am. I'm just an everyday guy. My background doesn't come from military or law enforcement or being a gunsmith or anything like that. My background just comes from being an everyday guy who believes strongly in my Second Amendment rights. I'm a Yankee with a gun, and I just believe strongly in my Second Amendment rights. So I look at this from that frame of mind. And when I look at this and I think, okay, would I rather have this 8-round or at the worst 7-round 9mm pistol with, boy, my voice is cracking. I don't know why. Probably need to take a drink of water. Would I rather have this little 7 or 8-round 9mm gun, and ammo's cheap for it, and I can practice real cheap? Or would I rather have this revolver with a pretty stiff trigger pull? Only 5 rounds, sights aren't quite as good, I don't use lasers. So, I guess that's the point I'm trying to make with small guns. But again, please don't send me hate mail saying that I hate revolvers. I don't hate revolvers, and I don't hate 1911s. But these things always beg the question, is there something better out there? And I think when it comes to defending your life, you need to ask that question. Don't you agree? I mean, what do you think? Really? I mean, send me an email or call into the voicemail. Or go to my Facebook page. Search me out, Handgun World on Facebook. And, you know, put some thoughts up on Facebook. Or whatever. But tell me what you think on some of this small gun stuff that I'm talking about. I think you always have to ask the question, is there something better out there? Now, I want to discuss point shooting and small guns. A lot of people say, well, you know, you don't have to worry so much about sights on these small guns because you're probably going to be point shooting them anyway. And they're usually the same crowd that says that they're belly guns or that they're bad breath distance guns or that they're not much good for anything past 2 or 3 yards. It's the same crowd that says, well, you know, you're probably going to be point shooting these guns anyway. Well, not so fast. I'm going to ask you to rethink that if that's you. Once again, what if that's the only gun you have and the threat is 7 to 10 yards away? These little small guns, to their credit, almost all these small guns being made today, they're very capable of being very, very accurate at 7 to 10, and if the shooter can do it, 15 to 20 yards. They're very capable. Okay, I've hit an 8-inch steel plate regularly at 50 yards with my Car PM9. 50 yards, an 8-inch steel plate with my Car PM9. So the gun is accurate enough to do it. The question is, can you, the shooter, do it? So that's why I think sights are important. Because you're going to need those sights to make a precision shot like that if you have to make a precision shot. You got a family member being held hostage. And what if they're more than 2 or 3 yards away? And you have to make a precision shot. Hey, think about it, folks. That's why I say you got to pay attention to sights. That's why I say the Glock 42. And by the way, sights that are changeable. You know, some people call those little dimples on a Ruger LCP, they call those sights. Well, I don't really call those sights because you can't change them out to something else if you don't like them. You know, you can maybe paint them up a little bit, but that's about it. So this is why I think you always have to ask the question, is there something better out there that gives me a better advantage with sights or a better advantage with triggers? Now, these small guns also tend to be less reliable, which is why I go back to what I always say, give every gun you have a 1,000-round trigger job. What's some of the disadvantages of these small guns? Well, especially the 380s. They're pretty expensive to give them a 1,000-round trigger job. I get that. I'm going to give my Glock 42 a 1,000-round trigger job anyway, but it's going to take a long time, and it's going to cost me a lot of money that I make from doing training classes and that I make from the Shooters Club, when you guys invest in the Shooters Club video program that Ben and I have. In my Amazon page, it could take me a while to make enough money to give my Glock 42 a 1,000-round trigger job, but I'm going to do it. If I'm going to bet my life on that gun, I want to make sure it's reliable and that I'm good with it and that it'll hold up. And it's a Glock. It's probably going to hold up. Probably not going to be much of a problem with that. But you do need to test these little guns. And, you know, don't just be the person that shoots a couple boxes of ammo and says, well, you know, that's not very pleasant to shoot. I'm going to carry it a lot, but I'm not going to shoot it much. Because I would question how good you're going to be in the moment of truth when you have to use that to save your life. So think about it. So if you're going to get a small gun, that's why I say, if you can get by with a 9mm, they're a lot less expensive to shoot. It's a lot easier to find 9mm ammo than it is to find 380. And 380 is so much more expensive. So if you can get these little guns, if you can handle them, if you can carry them, if you can make a commitment on these small guns, get them in a caliber that is widely popular and very low cost. And some people are buying them in 40 caliber. I mean, Car Arms makes those small guns in 40. Springfield makes the XDS in 40. Smith & Wesson makes the M&P Shield in 40 caliber. I don't like these little guns, these little small guns in 40. I think they recoil way too much. And most of you know, I just don't believe in the fact that the 40 caliber has enough extra power to make it worth my while to have less capacity, more muzzle flash, a louder noise, and more recoil. Especially in the smaller guns. I mean, I shot a Smith & Wesson M&P Shield in 40. A student brought one to class. He was very gracious. Let me shoot it. Thank you very much. He knows who he is. I don't have permission to use his name, so I'm not going to. And he let me shoot it. And in fact, I shot a couple of magazines through his M&P Shield 40, and then I shot a couple through my M&P 9 millimeter shield. And I like the 9 a whole lot better. A lot more controllable, a lot more pleasant. More controllable, more pleasant, and lower cost. You know what all that means? It means you're going to shoot it more, it means you're going to enjoy it, and it probably means you're going to be better with that gun when the time comes that you might have to use it, which I hope never comes for any of you listening to this podcast, because lest somebody say it, this podcast that I do here, it's not about looking for trouble, it's about being able to react if trouble finds you. And if that bad day comes and trouble finds you, and you have a small gun, which one's it going to be? Have you done your homework in buying them? What kind of sights does it have? How reliable is it? How many rounds have you run through it? Is it pleasant to shoot? Because if it's not, please get rid of it and get something else that's more pleasant to shoot. All right, let's see. What's another small gun that I would like? Now, these are handguns, by the way. I'm not talking about small rifles and small shotguns in this episode. Well, I took a little break there because I had another phone call come in, but I think that's pretty much all I want to say on specific models of guns. Let me close the show by talking about what I see are the advantages and disadvantages of small guns. Let me expand on that a little bit more. Now, I see this just from doing this for 8 years. 8 years is not all that long. Actually, close to 9 years. Been doing this since 2005, so close to 9 years. Been teaching over a couple years and put a lot of people through classes now so far. I've had a lot of folks come through. Probably, I've lost exact count. It's probably close to 300 people have come through the classes that I've been involved with, that I've either taught or been co-instructing in those classes. So probably more than that, probably closer to 400. But anyway, as I just kind of keep an eye out there as to what I see going on, this is what I think are the advantages and the disadvantages from my perspective of small guns. We all know the obvious. Let's start with the disadvantages. We know the obvious disadvantages. The obvious disadvantages is that they are lower capacity and harder to shoot, and sometimes less reliable. Another disadvantage is I think that small guns sometimes allow people to get a little lazy. And here's what I'm talking about. Again, why not walk around with the biggest, highest capacity gun that you can possibly pack and stay concealed? If you have to be concealed. And if you're an open carrier and you're in an open carry state, well, then concealment obviously is not an issue. You can just go packing a big old gun. Why not do that? See, I think a larger gun is actually more intimidating. I mean, it's kind of psychology, right? That's just kind of human nature. People see a small gun, they're less afraid of a small gun than they are of a big gun. Even though in the hands of a trained person, that trained person can do as much damage with a small gun. But a big gun just kind of has an intimidating factor. So that's a disadvantage of a small gun. I think it makes people lazy. Okay? It's so much easier to reach into the safe, grab that small gun, than it is your mid-size or your full-size gun. And really, you could probably still get away with packing your mid-size or full-size gun if it's your full-size 1911 or it's your full-size striker-fired service pistol. But we get lazy and we pack these small guns because they're so convenient and they're so comfy. But we're carrying something that's underpowered, under capacity, and the average person might not be as good with it. So that's probably a less than obvious disadvantage. But I wanted to bring that up. Advantages. Well, we know the obvious. Because they're small, they're easy to hide. But have you ever thought about this? Another advantage of small guns is when you want to carry more than one of them. For example, I know a lot of women that may want to have more than one small gun. They might want to have a small gun in their purse, although I'm not a big fan of purse carry. But the fact that I have absolutely no experience in carrying a purse, that's about as far as I'm going to comment on that. Off-body carry is generally not as good of an idea as on-body carry. But if you must carry it in your purse, some ladies like to have a real small purse. Therefore, they need to have a small gun. They can't get away with a mid-size or a large gun if they're going to purse carry. If you're a guy and you want to carry more than one of these small guns, maybe one in each pocket, for example. Or maybe you're going to carry one off-body and you have very, very limited space in a bag. So think about that. And of course, the weight. You know, if you're going backpacking or if you're going hiking, for example, fishing, whatever kind of activity, if weight is a huge concern. I mean, there are a lot of people involved in a lot of activities where they might be out all day on foot, and every ounce, every half a pound, every third of a pound makes a big difference. Well, these small guns, although lower in capacity and sometimes underpowered, their weight advantages are huge. I mean, after all, it's still a gun. You still have a gun. But yet you've got that weight advantage. And that can really be huge depending on what your activity is. And last but not least, the advantages of small guns, obviously, it can be with you all the time. Folks, I cannot think of a reason why I could not at least carry my little Car Arms P380 pocket pistol. Unless I'm going to a place where concealed carry is not allowed, where it's not legal. I just can't think of any. There's no activity that I do that I can think of or that I've ever run into where I cannot have that gun on me. It was in my pocket when I went to a doctor's visit recently. So, you know, it's just ridiculously easy to carry. And therefore, you are always armed. And therefore, you have a you're much more likely to remember rule number one of a gunfight, and that is have a gun. And that's the most important thing, is have a gun. Right? Don't get into a gunfight to begin with, but have a gun. Okay, so that's my show on small guns. Maybe you got something out of it. I'd like to hear your comments. Don't forget about my voicemail. And folks, thanks for supporting me. Don't forget about my Amazon page. You don't have to spend any extra money. If you like what I do on this show, if you like the people that I bring on for interviews, if you like some of the work that I do, or that Ben and I do together and so forth, there's lots of ways you can support us. If you're going to buy something on Amazon, go to handgunworld.com, click the Amazon store page, and you'll find a direct link there. And you can use my affiliate link at Amazon, and I make a nice little fee. It's not a lot, not as much as you might think, but every little bit helps, and enough people that are doing it, It helps out support the show and support my efforts. And like I mentioned, you don't have to spend any extra money. I'll call that person back shortly because I'm getting ready to wrap up the show. The Shooters Club. We got some new videos up on the Shooters Club. For $75 a year or only $8 a month, you can become a member of our exclusive video instructional video club. It's a special website. You're also going to be involved in the drawing, excellent giveaways, giving away a gun, and many other things at the end of June. So you can join our Shooters Club for $75 a year or $8 a month. There are still spots left for the June 7th and 8th class. Ben Branham and I are teaming up with John Hodaway. So you're going to have three instructors for 2 days. You're going to have me, Ben Branham, and John Hodaway. And we're going to be teaching Beyond Concealed Carry Enhanced. And you've heard John on this show before explaining some of the stuff he's going to teach. That's going to be pretty cool. There's still spots left. That class is pretty darn close to getting full. We don't like to overfill classes, folks. If you overfill a class, people don't get a good enough experience. And we want you to walk away saying that you got more than your money's worth. So that's another way to support us. And that pretty much wraps it up. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of your weekly Handgun World podcast. I'm Bob Main. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. The loudest sound a shooter hears is a bang when he's expecting a click, or a click when he's expecting a bang. Hey, I hope you enjoyed the new music by Ozark Revival. And next week, I'm going to talk about how you can go to Ozark Revival's page and you can support them and get a free download of their music. Stay tuned for that coming up next week. I'm going to dedicate a few minutes on the show to Ozark Revival. But it's called You Ain't Getting My Guns. I'll catch you next week. Goodbye.